You can see that it's a human skull. It has got some clear differences for modern humans. And this was the first Neanderthal fossil that showed that facial shape.
We'd make an assumption that they weren't that bright. You know, they're not going to last, so what was the problem, rather than asking, what could these people do?
On a bus in London, would he look out of place? A couple of people might give him a second look, but an awful lot would just probably ignore him.
One of the most precious skulls at the Natural History Museum looks strangely human, but not quite. It was found 160 years ago in a quarry in Gibraltar, and she was the first Neanderthal anyone had ever seen. Professor Chris Stringer, research leader in human origins at the Natural History Museum, brought her out of storage to show me.
Okay, so undoing the leather strap. And some little hooks there, and we can lift the specimen out and get our first look at it. The face is dominated really by this big nose. So the theory goes, they evolved under predominantly colder and drier conditions. They were breathing in cold, dry air, and this big surface area inside that nasal cavity would have warmed up and humidified the air. But all of these earlier humans had a strong brow ridge over the eyes. We mentioned that the low forehead, the pulled-out face, the rather long and low skull, and on the lower jaw we would have seen very little sign of a chin. And this was the first Neanderthal fossil that showed that facial shape. In terms of brain size, the Neanderthals are up there with us. But in terms of the quality of that brain, we can't really tell much about it. The internal wiring is what's really going to count in that brain, and we have no knowledge of that.
What we do know is that Neanderthals lived alongside us for thousands of years. How like us were they? Could they even speak? Dr. Anna Barney, an acoustics researcher at Southampton University, has remodelled the voice box of a Neanderthal skull to try and find out if they could make even the most basic of vowel sounds.
The critical vowel sounds that we want to know if it can make are R, E and U, because these are the vowel sounds that happen in every language. So if we come over to my computer, I'll show you some of the sounds. This is the modern human U.
U.
And this is the Neanderthal U.
U.
Sounds quite similar to me.
Quite similar. This is the modern human I.
I. I.
And the Neanderthal. Again,
they sound quite similar.
That's right. And then the modern human R. And the Neanderthal.
Oh, that's very different.
That's very different. And that's because where the Neanderthal has a much wider pharynx, the tube that just sits at the back of your throat and above your larynx, when the tongue goes back, it doesn't really fill it up, and that makes the sound quite different.
Her work shows that the Neanderthals could more or less make the three core vowel sounds of modern languages. But does that mean that Neanderthals, like this skull treasure, could make words?
To make words, it needs you to have the mental capacity to think of making words and to turn those thoughts into motor actions, and that's something that is still really an open question. But if you can speak, you can say things that nobody has ever said before, you can have new ideas. So language allows you to say tomorrow in a way that you can't say if you don't have language, or yesterday. So it gives you a timeline. All sorts of complex ideas can be expressed when you've got language that perhaps you can't when you've simply got a series of set messages.
I think that they must have had language because, in my view, language evolves out of social complexity. The Neanderthals were highly evolved humans. Certainly they buried their dead, they looked after their sick, they made complex tools, they used pigments. So they had many elements in common with us in terms of complexity.
If you look at the early studies on Neanderthals, there was a big assumption underlying them that they were sort of closer to monkeys or closer to chimpanzees, closer to great apes. People's view of Neanderthals has shifted them more towards being modern humans. So you get an entirely different sort of approach to studying them these days about whether they could speak, whereas previously people would just assume that they couldn't.
Model makers, like Jez Gibson-Harris at Crawley Creatures, can give us an idea of what their overall shape was. When I visited him, I found a hairy, muscular 5'2" redhead that took me by surprise.
This on Neanderthal.
Wow, so here he is. I mean, that looks very human.
He does look very human.
I'm just going to have a little feel. Yeah.
He's made in a sort of... The skin is a silicon rubber skin.
It's a sort of clammy, a hairy, clammy arm.
But all the hairs on the body have been individually hand-punched into the skin. On this particular figure, you'll notice there are scars and markings on his body and the scars on his face. We can see a scar here on the head, on the forehead. Because he was getting injured a lot, but he's got to survive in these really harsh conditions. Once you see the finished figure here, he's pretty much like us, apart from a big nose. And eyebrows and a receding chin. So on a bus in London, would he look out of place? A couple of people might give him a second look, but an awful lot would just probably ignore him.
The Neanderthals thrived in Europe until Homo sapiens emerged from Africa and outcompeted them. So the skull of this female now represents a dead species. It's a failing we've associated with them ever since. Anna Barney explains.
We make an assumption that they weren't that bright. They're not going to last, so what was the problem, rather than asking what could these people do. There's a suggestion that we simply bred with them and wiped them out that way. So quite a lot of modern humans have a little bit of Neanderthal DNA that suggests there was some interbreeding between. So we were just cleverer.
Maybe there was no such word as no in Neanderthal language, I don't know.
There was a view 10 years ago from some of the genetic data, the early genetic data, that the Neanderthals completely died out, all trace of them vanished at least 30,000 years ago. But now, of course, we know that it wasn't a complete replacement, that there was interbreeding. And so people outside of Africa have about a 2% input of Neanderthal DNA. So you and I have Neanderthal DNA in us.
Although the Gibraltar skull was the first to bring us face-to-face with our Neanderthal relatives, we're still trying to discover more about them. Will we ever really know what they looked like or how they lived?
Maybe somewhere there is a frozen Neanderthal. Maybe. It's a long shot. Or maybe there's one that fell into a peat bog and the body is preserved in that peat bog with all the muscle and everything preserved and the whole body shape and the brain. So that would be a tremendous thing to have, and maybe one day it will turn up.
You can see the Neanderthal skull and other icons that have changed the face of science in the Treasures Gallery at the Natural History Museum.